Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. You ever hear that old joke about the inauguration of the first ever Jewish female president? Here's Brenda Fishman to fill you in.
And seated right in the front row, front and center, was her widowed mother. Proud as could be, she sat and watched, and just as her daughter, the president-elect, was about to step up onto the dais to become sworn in, she turned to the senior senator and said, "Do you see that young woman? Her brother's a doctor."
Studying medicine requires intelligence and discipline and considerable expense, making it a prestigious profession across America's religious and ethnic stratum. That wasn't always true. Bess Lovejoy wrote about one of the first major riots in the post-revolution United States, caused by popular anger against doctors. Her story of the so-called Doctors' Riot, which took place in New York City in April of 1788, is featured on Smithsonian.com. Bess, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, we hold doctors in such high esteem now, knowing they've been through so much schooling, that may be part of the reason. Not always the case. What did an aspiring physician in the late 18th century need to do in order to learn their practice?
Well, it really varied from place to place, but most of the licensing rules didn't come into place until pretty late in the century or in the early 20th century. And so a lot of the time you would just do some private training with another physician, and often that was enough to allow you to go and hang out your shingle, particularly in a small town, and say you were a doctor. So the whole process of going to medical school and getting licensed and all of that wasn't really in place the way we think of it today in the era after the Revolutionary War. Things were just much too tumultuous.
But dissections were a pretty necessary part of the experience, from what I understand.
Yeah, certainly. Well, if you're going to be operating on somebody, you hope to have some training beforehand. And, of course, today doctors are increasingly able to use digital means to practice dissection. They still dissect human beings, but there's a move towards doing it digitally and using even synthetic cadavers now. But back in the old days, really the only way to practice was on a cadaver. And so dissection was considered a pretty important part of medical training, particularly if you wanted to be, you know, good at what you were doing.
What was the attitude toward operating on cadavers at the time?
Pretty negative, pretty suspicious. I mean, this is one of the attitude changes that I think is really interesting. Until relatively recently, people thought of messing with the body after death as violating the sanctity of the dead bodies. There were also some Christians, and this varied, but there was a certain attitude towards this idea that if you were dissected after death, you might not be resurrected. And there was the other problem here is that because nobody was donating their body to science, the supply of cadavers was generally coming from graveyards. So often the legal supply of cadavers would just be a handful of executed criminals, and that was the case in both England and America. But there were far more doctors who wanted to practice on cadavers than there was supply of cadavers. So frequently, you know, the doctors and the medical students, and then sometimes also thieves that they would hire, would be going into the cemeteries and digging up bodies for dissection. Mm. And that was another thing that people really objected to.
And I read in your article that it was the African-American graveyards that were especially being disinterred in order to provide cadavers. And a group of African-Americans, both free and enslaved at the time, did petition the government about this. So tell us more about that phenomenon and their complaint.
Sure. Well, yeah, there was what was known at the time as the Negroes' Burial Ground, which was established just outside of the city of New York City's city limits, right next to a pauper's graveyard. And the medical students would rob both of those graveyards for bodies. But what ended up happening is that the cadavers they were dissecting were disproportionately black. And, I mean, that it was for the reason that you might imagine, which is just wholesale racism. Black bodies weren't given the same... They weren't thought of as being fully human in the same way that white bodies were. And so there was actually a petition. I can't remember the number of free and enslaved black people who lodged this petition with New York City City Council in, I believe it was February 1788, but they complained. And it's interesting because they actually didn't just complain about the dissection and the robbery of the graves for the dissection, but they actually complained about how it was done. I think they said something about bodies being dragged away in wanton sallies of excess and entrails being spread around for animals. So they kind of said, you know, we understand that dissection needs to happen, but can you at least do it in a more orderly way? And the petition was entirely ignored. But what happened to kind of change things is that then there was a report of the body of a white woman being stolen from Trinity Churchyard a couple months after the petition from the blacks of New York. And that's when the popular resentment really started to boil over.
Yeah, tell us what happened. That seemed to have been the boiling point. That was in February 1788, that the body of a white woman had been stolen. That really changed the game. And what happened?
Well, there's conflicting accounts of how the riot started. No one is exactly sure, but it seems that there were some small boys who were playing in the grass outside of New York Hospital, and that was one of the places where these kind of private lectures and dissections were taking place. And basically the boys saw something that really upset them. Either they climbed up and saw a body being dissected, or they saw sort of a withered arm being hung out the window to dry. And in one version of the story that gets repeated a lot of the time, one of the boys saw an arm being waved at the window by one of the medical students. And keep in mind, the medical students were probably boys who were only about 17 or 18. And so they're kind of messing with boys who are about 11 or 12. So one of these medical students is supposed to have said, "This is your mother's arm. I just dug it up." And the boy, you know, horrified, climbs down the ladder and runs to his father, who's a mason, working with a bunch of men on a building site sort of further down Broadway. And he tells his dad what happened. And his dad is concerned because, in fact, the boy's mother had just recently died. And so they go to the graveyard, exhume the coffin, and they do find the boy's mother's coffin empty. And so the father is very upset, and he gathers all of his other friends, all these other masons, and they're still carrying all their tools, their picks and their shovels and everything, and they march on New York Hospital and proceed to start tearing it apart. And that's pretty much how the riot starts.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm talking with Bess Lovejoy, who wrote about the gory New York City riot that shaped American medicine. That's the name of her article for Smithsonian.com. You feature some quotes in the article about the start of the riot, including one from Colonel William Heth. "The cry of barbarity was soon spread." So this started running amok all over town. It sounds pretty gruesome. What happened?
It was pretty gruesome, and like I said, there's conflicting accounts, but it sounds like when this mob of masons and other workers got to the hospital, they started taking out all of the pathological specimens, many of which had been imported from Europe. They'd start dragging them into the streets and setting them afire, and most of the medical students flee, although a couple of them try to stay to protect the specimens. They find some bodies that are being dissected in another room. They drag those to the bonfire also. And then what happens is, I think finally the mayor comes down and he escorts the remaining medical students off to jail for their own protection because he's worried that they're going to get dragged into the bonfire too. And the mob rages for a while and they burn things and destroy things. Things settle down overnight, but then in the morning, another mob goes and basically starts searching the entire city for cadavers in the midst of being dissected. So they search doctors' houses. They search Columbia. Alexander Hamilton is actually on the steps of Columbia trying to defend the school against the mob, and he actually gets kind of roughed up. I think he's knocked down, and he's not able to work for a couple of days because of it. And they don't find anything at Columbia, and in fact, they don't really find anything else in the city because as word of the mob has spread, the medical students and doctors have kind of carefully hidden anything that might be found. But the mob gets really upset. They go around the city, continue looking, and then finally they go to the jail where a couple of the medical students are being held, and they attack it. And then the militia comes out, and then more militia men come out, and people are fighting with bricks and bayonets and stones. And there's conflicting accounts of how many injuries and deaths there were, but somewhere between 3 and 20 people died. you know, and there's reports of blood staining the pavement and all of that. So it was pretty bloody, and it lasted for a few days until the militia was able to kind of settle things down.
Wow. Well, so what were some of the more immediate effects of the riots on doctors and their practices, both conventional and educational?
Well, the sort of the immediate effect is they stopped advertising. They pulled all of their ads from the papers, and then several doctors published announcements saying, we've never robbed any bodies from the city. And that's interesting because, as I was saying, the so-called Negro burial ground and the Pauper's burial ground were established outside the city. Essentially, these doctors are telling people, well, no, we've never robbed any respectable bodies. It's just, you know, these black bodies. You don't have to worry too much about that. But this is all sort of short-lived because pretty soon things start back up as they were before. And the following year, there's a law passed that tries to regulate the supply of cadavers and establish a legal supply, which was basically just getting them exclusively from executed criminals. But the law is kind of a joke. It doesn't supply as many cadavers as necessary. And so the grave robbing continues, you know, into the 19th century in some parts of the United States. But throughout the 19th century, there's a succession of these anatomy acts, sometimes called bone bills, that try to regulate this and create a legal supply of bodies for dissection so that medical students and doctors aren't robbing graveyards anymore.
One of the most important consequences, though, of these riots relates to how we started this conversation, the training required for doctors. Mm-hmm. What changed as a result?
There was a movement towards more schooling, more test taking, more exams for doctors. But, I mean, the unfortunate thing there is even legitimate medical schools were robbing graveyards. I did another article for the Smithsonian about the medical school in Atlanta that in 1989, when they were renovating the building, they found hundreds and hundreds of bones in the building's basement, and they were primarily from bodies that had been stolen by the kind of in-house so-called resurrection man, which is what they sometimes called thieves employed by the school to rob graveyards. And they actually had an in-house slave who they employed to do this work, and his name was Grandison Harris. So even if you were required to go to school, take exams, you might still very well be getting your bodies completely extra-legally, let's say.
Well, best love, Joy. Resurrecting a little bit of unknown history for us. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Best Lovejoy is author of Rest in Pieces, The Curious Fates of Famous Corpses. She's speaking with us today about her article for Smithsonian.com. It's called The Gory New York Riots That Shaped American Medicine. You can read the article yourself at wordofmouthradio.org.